Welcome aboard to your second hour of the Internet Advisor. This is the hour that you get to set the agenda. And you do that by calling us at 800-859-0957 with your question about the computers that you use, about your connection to the Internet. Maybe it might be about your phone or some other electronic device that you have. We'd love to take a crack. We've got a great group of people here in the studio just waiting to tackle the issues that you have. So don't be bashful. Call us at 800-859-0957. Well, we've gathered quite a crowd of experts in studio with us here. Mr. Gary Baker is here, Mr. Ed Rudell, Cal Carson, and Maile Ostley is with us as well. Thank you very much for sticking around.
Oh, my pleasure.
I'm sure you've got some answers with all those years of experience that you have.
I'd be happy to answer any questions that are coming in.
You know, as a matter of fact, if you happen to have a question about a website that you have or something that applies to that, Manny has got certainly is the expert in that area. It'd be good to have him chime in for you.
I think Gary could help out with that, too. He and I had some good conversations earlier before the show started.
We did. We found out that we both started ISPs in the same year.
Oh, really?
Yep. And it was funny because when he said, yeah, you started an ISP in 94, I went, come on, I know everybody that started an ISP in 94.
There weren't many of you around then, were there?
And we all congregated in panic, that much I can tell you.
Ah.
With the exception of a couple, because right. RustNet was not in panic.
No, he was not.
And Richard Steenan, who's a mutual friend of ours. And then we were actually in Ann Arbor, along with a couple others.
So
There were four or five in Ann Arbor
but
that year.
We needed to be close to an Ameritech central station, though, that's for sure.
Yeah, so, and that was the difference, really. We had Merit on last week celebrate their 50th anniversary. And you wanted to be where the fiber was,
right,
the backbone
exactly.
was.
Exactly,
or you wanted to be near Merit.
Right.
And we started up... on the first floor, and right above us was the Merit NOC, the Network Operations
Can't get any
Center.
Closer than that.
That was we ran the Ethernet cable.
Exactly.
And it worked too pretty funny. Well. Hey, Frank from Northville, we'll be with you in a second. We had a call from Joe, a friend of a listener of ours in Livonia, and he wanted to tell us about e-waste pickup, that there are certain days in some communities that they do that during the year. Ed, do you have that out where you are?
Yep. Brandon has it once a year. I think it's in June this year, and I have, I also get rid of, you know, garage doors, scrap metal.
Right, hazardous
like
metal and things like that, paint and things like that. You'll find that in communities. Now, what Joe said, I think it's really important to keep in mind is, if you put stuff on the curb during the rest of the year, that's going to a landfill. It's most likely going to a landfill.
Well, unless you pick it up.
Yeah.
Because
that's a good question.
In some communities, if you put it out on the curb and they can clearly see that it's paint or there's old batteries and that sort of thing, they
won't
pick it up.
Yeah.
Now, in my community, because we have to pay for our
waste
garbage,
pickup,
our waste pickup, and we're always fighting with four different contractors because the prices keep going up and up and up. But we could call specifically and say, we have this type of equipment we'd like to, can you come by and pick it up?
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that goes for large couches to, you know, computers with, you know, or TVs.
I guess the key thing here is suppose or presume that if you put electronic stuff out on the curb, that it's necessarily going to be taken care of, you know, with all diligence for recycling. If it's during the year, except on those special days,
and
it may end up in the well.
And I believe, now, Cal, the Renaissance Center has a big thing that General Motors puts on down there.
Yeah, once a year.
Once a year.
They actually have all the recyclers come in, and they park out in our parking lot down by the river. And when you come in the morning, before you go park your car in the lot, you can drive into that lot, and they will actually take your old electronics and hazardous waste materials, stuff like that, and they'll do the recycling for it right there in the lot. The other thing that I want to mention, too, is that, and I took advantage of this a couple of weeks ago, in Southeast Oakland County, they have an association, and it's called,
SOCRA.
If I could read the small thing, it says Resource Recovery and Recycling Authority of Southwest Oakland County.
Okay.
RRRASOC. If you look that up on the web,
Rock-a-sock?
Yes, they have different.
So much for that brand.
Yeah. But the good thing about the brand is they take it away. But you can go to them and you can drive up there with e-waste, yard waste, chemical waste, all that sort of thing, and they'll take it right out of your trunk and they separate it all out and they make sure it gets done.
If you live in South Oakland County, you can also go to the Sakura site, which is on Crooks Road, just north of 14 Mile, and do the same thing during the week. Okay, hey, listen, our number again is 800-859-0957. And Frank from Northville, welcome to the Internet Advisor. What can we do for you?
Thank you for taking my call. Got a little problem, and I don't know if it's a hardware issue or a software issue, a little bit off your topic, but I have an HP Elite book, and it runs on Windows 7, mm-hmm. and in the top right-hand corner of the keyboard, there's a little button up there for volume and for mute. A couple weeks ago, it got stuck on mute, and it's been driving my wife crazy ever since.
Really?
You mean she can't talk at all?
I'm talking about the button.
Oh, okay.
Watch out. Watch out where you're going.
I was going to borrow the mute button myself.
Watch out. You could get hurt.
Is it actually stuck, the button?
Physically?
If you touch it, does it bounce?
It moves fine, but it's orange. The backlight is orange, and it won't come off of orange. So we haven't been able to get any volume out of the laptop itself. We've been running for the last 2 weeks with a little external speaker
plugged
in the side.
If you have the laptop anywhere near you, but if you don't, it doesn't matter.
I have it right in front of me.
On the lower lower left-hand side of the keyboard, do you see a key that says FN for function?
No.
Because
down in the lower left-hand corner?
No. Yeah, like where the spacebar area is.
It could be on the right, but it's on the lower side.
Yeah.
It's usually next to the Windows key, FN.
Yeah. Frank Hansen. No, I see the Windows. Are you talking on the icon bar?
No, it's on the keyboard.
On the keyboard.
On the keyboard, okay.
Tell you what, hang on, Frank. Hang on. We're going to put you on hold, and we'll try to help see you unravel this during the break. And for the rest of you out there, come on in. The questions are fine, and the water's fine as well. 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. Looking for your questions. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. And Eric Dortch, good to see you back there. Thank you very much for being engineer. And Logan Stadifer, thank you again to my granddaughter, who is the sweet voice that you talk to when you call in to 800-859-0957, and that might be reason enough for you to call. However, I will encourage you not to put off calling, because what happens is we get close to the end of the program, and we just don't have time for all of the callers that call in. So while there's room right now, that's going to change, so please, if you got a question, give us a call with it. And by the way, our mantra is the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. 800-859-0957. And Ed, I think you have some help to offer for Frank from Northville. Frank, thanks for sticking around.
Yes, thank you. My daughter walked over here. She was listening. She walked over and said, Dad, the function key is right there. So I found the function key.
Okay. All right, we got it.
And we were thinking about that, but let me confirm this. You have your HP Elite book is silver, and it has a dedicated button that is for muting and volume up and down?
That is correct.
Okay, because where Cal was going, and I was going to go there too, is that some of HPs and Dells also have the function key where you can hit the function F12 and that's volume up, and function F11 that's volume down. That's not the case with yours. So you have a dedicated button, and HP calls those the was it quick set buttons? I'm trying to remember what they quick launch buttons.
Ah, okay.
So
yeah.
So you probably have physical there's crud in there. I don't know how else to say it. So it's probably physically damaged underneath there, and it'd be difficult to clean the micro switch. But I don't know the model number that you have, but in some HP and Dell's units, you have the ability to disable those audio switches.
Oh.
So you might want to go into your BIOS. So on a HP, when you power it up, you would tap the F10, and until you get into the HP setup, you might find something in there about enabling or disabling that top row of buttons. That way, when you use your Windows mouse to go over the mute control, you can enable it or disable it with that volume.
The only other thing that I might want to suggest to you, that if it is a mechanical problem, if the machine's out of warranty and has been for quite a while, then turn the machine off, disconnect the power supply from the machine, get a Q-tip, and then soak it with alcohol and take it and run it around the rim of the mute button.
Oh, there you go.
A couple of times. And then either get some compressed air or just take and blow really hard on it and blow whatever excessive fluid out of it. Then do it one more time and then blow that fluid out. Let it dry for about, I don't know, 10 minutes or so. Then plug the power back up to it and try it then.
Is there any such thing like in the settings where there's you have to go 3 or 4 or 5 different screens down into it for like travel mute so that if you're traveling you can use your computer and it won't accidentally jump in, you know, the volume if you put it on mute, it won't accidentally, you know, hit the volume to come on without you wanting it to?
Normally in the software you either set it so it's mute or it's not. It doesn't care whether it's being traveled or not or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But in the software, you can turn it off so you can say mute or turn it back on. And that's just a right mouse click down on the system tray on the speaker icon. You can mute it down there.
Right. But I remember in the old days, we used to do this in 98 when Windows 98 came on. People we'd send them a utility. And even though their computer was muted in Windows, it would say, "Watching porn, I'm watching porn here." And it would turn on their volume. And we would do that to our friends and colleagues, embarrass the heck out of them.
Oh, my
so there
Lord.
Are ways of doing that, and I'm sure there's web-based JavaScripts that
aren't
do
you
same
glad
thing.
That Ed isn't in the cubicle next to you?
So
but try those things and see how those work out for you and let us know.
Okay, thank you very much. You guys got a great show.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Frank.
The other thing I was going to say, and I didn't get a chance, is you can go to the HP website and try re-downloading their Quick Launch Buttons installer, because that might provide you a graphical representation to enable or disable that mute.
Excellent idea. Okay. We've heard that as a suggestion many times, to go to the manufacturer's site, whatever that may be, and see if they have drivers there that will help to solve the problem. That often is the solution for a lot of problems.
But I like Cal's solution, a little isopropylene alcohol in there, and that might just take care of it.
Manny, I wanted to ask you a question. Oh, by the way, folks, our number again is 800-859-0957, and our lines are open for questions. Manny, you mentioned before, or Gary mentioned actually, that both of you started ISPs, Internet Service Providers. You were ISPs at one time.
Exactly.
Why did you get out of the business?
Well, actually, you know what? It's kind of interesting. Our corporation actually goes back to 1987 in advertising and marketing.
Oh, wow.
And I started off the Internet Group in 94. You know, just seeing the writing on the wall and being an early adopter myself, it didn't take very long to figure out where the industry was going to go. I think just like Gary, we, you know, just jumped right into that.
Right. You both jumped in right at the beginning, yeah.
But as the 90s progressed, and as you might remember, you know, the technology stocks and the industry as a whole just went boom.
Yeah.
Especially after Windows 95 came out in 96.
Yeah. That's right. You might remember that.
And so...
And the introduction of the GUI, the graphic user interface.
Right. Yeah. By the time we got to the year 1999, 2000, we ran into the problem that Comcast and AT&T were starting to undercut everybody that was already reselling what they provided.
Oh, we've heard this from other providers,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and so I think that space changed. Now, as an ISP, you kind of had the option of either wanting to continue competing with these guys, or maybe you would set up a data center, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, house everybody's computers in one facility, and that would be your quote-unquote ISP or connectivity method of continuing your business.
Mm-hmm.
Option number two is you sold your ISP business and you moved
on. and discretion being the better part of valor.
Exactly.
So once again, it was the big guys eating up the little guys. Huh?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's no question. That's exactly what happened.
We heard this from Charlie Hopper. Remember that?
That's right.
Charlie Hopper talked about that to us as well. That was one of the things that went out, has gone up on up north as well.
Yeah, you know, of all those 40 or so, in we started ours in the spring of 94, I think, and we were the first for business. There were a couple other really, really small ones, one that had 8 lines and only in Ann Arbor, MSEN. But there were about 40 or so that came on in the next year.
Right, exactly.
And I don't think any of those 40 are left, except for Online Tech, the one that we started.
Yeah, that's true.
And
yeah.
Jan Ness runs that now.
Exactly.
And they're doing exceedingly well.
But they've also shifted their model, too.
Well, we were always different.
Yeah.
That was just one of the things that we did was the ISP. We were an ASP before you called it that. Mm-hmm. And then we also had data center capabilities. So we did that for a number of companies as well early on. The only thing I'm absolutely positive of is it would not be doing this well had I not sold it.
So. You know, what's really fascinating, too, just to quickly get through this, I remember so many people were becoming ISPs. I used to deal with a company called Purple Hat. Mm-hmm. I dealt with a company called Mish.com. And believe it or not, there was a tire retailer that was also doing internet service providing as well in this area.
Yeah, and then they had MetroCell as well.
Yeah, it was just so weird.
But you know what was interesting is when we started our business, and you might remember it, back in that time, we could charge $40 a month for a 28.8 connection, right? Remember that? Well, not too long after, I think it was like early 1995, a company out of California just went 1995 on everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't remember the name of the company. It was Net something.
Netlink.
Net, was it? Yeah, it was Netlink. Netlink. And all of a sudden, the business model changed very quickly.
Yeah, when they cut, you know, when you cut your price by 50%.
Absolutely.
For small guys, that was hard.
That was the first struggle. And then the next struggle being the big guys coming into town. Right.
I'm dying to know. You know, we've got a bunch of people hanging on here. Folks, just Mark and Orlando and the other Mark. Two Marks are hanging on there. Hang on for just a minute because I want to ask you guys. Charter, Time Warner Cable have now got a deal going where they're going to be combining and coming together and kind of creating this huge monolith. What do you think about that? Because that's the kind of almost a natural progression to this whole thing.
Yeah, and I think the whole space of connectivity is changing. You know, Comcast as an as far as what as being a big provider too. I think what's going to end up happening is they will have greater control about what we can or can't do. That I think is a potential fear here.
Yeah. Yeah,
and, exactly. they've been trying to, you know, the whole idea of controlling the net and
I guess my response would be, you know, all those little guys that you just mentioned, those are the little guys today in net connectivity, right? So when you think of those as the little guys getting together, that's how they compete with AT&T and Comcast and
Verizon.
And Verizon is also providing
right,
it.
Exactly.
And we're going to see more and more of the cross between traditional internet providers and cable companies and cellular companies.
You know what's going on? It's the exact same thing back when we had telephone. Remember we used to have everybody had these little telephone companies all came together and became the big Bell. And I think it's going to end up being the same thing with internet. It's going to all come on and be under one umbrella.
Well, and there was one, everybody thinks Bell was the only one. It wasn't. General Telephone.
Yeah,
and
GTE,
all the little guys came in, right?
GTE, exactly.
And that's what's happening today is all the little guys that are still big.
Right. Exactly.
All right. Coming back in just a moment, we'll be talking with Mark, number one from Detroit, Orlando from Detroit, and another Mark from Auburn Hills, and you as well. Well, true to form, folks are piling on at the end here, but we're going to be able to get to your calls. Just going to warn you once again to get a call in quickly, and we'll set you up and get to answering your questions. 800-859-0957. All right, let's go to Mark from Detroit. Mark, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How may we help you?
Thank you so much. Great to talk with you.
Yep.
I have a question. I'm using an email live program, Windows Live Mail, 2012, and I have a Hotmail account. But unless you download an update, you will not be able to sync with Windows Live Mail with Hotmail. And I'm wondering if anybody knows where to go to download the update.
He's actually correct.
Well, I did not realize that.
Yeah, okay. I've had a few people actually approach me on the same subject because there's Microsoft sent out
a live mail
message
program because I'm blind, you can't see.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, navigating email a lot better.
I tell you something, with both of your eyes functioning perfectly, that would be very difficult. So the problem is Microsoft sent that message out?
Microsoft sent that message out, and they've kind of warned everybody about the fact that they can't use that interface to go to work with Hotmail. So their options basically are going to be to go use a browser or go to Outlook.com or possibly pull up something else like Thunderbird, for example.
I wanted to go to Thunderbird, but I didn't like it. I understand, though, that there is an update that you can add to the Windows Live 2012 to make it work, but I can't figure out where to go to get it.
And to be perfectly honest with you, because it's a free product, I don't know how much Microsoft's going to really support that. I mean, the question is whether or not it would only work for a certain time and then drop again. I'm just curious if it would be better for everybody just to find a solution right from the beginning, like start right now finding a different option.
So if you found another option, let's say you went with Outlook, how would you handle that, Ben? Would you open an account in Outlook for the Live Mail and for the Hotmail?
Yeah. When I'm saying Outlook, I mean that Microsoft's Office product called Outlook is you would just switch from Live Mail to Outlook the software.
Is it available as a standalone?
It is available as a standalone. I think the option might be that you go to Office 365 and just pay the monthly fee because it's like $5-6 a month, and you get all of the Microsoft Office products all together.
Isn't it true, guys, you can also get those web-based ones online for free?
Oh, there are. Like Thunderbird is another option.
No, I'm thinking of Outlook. I thought there's a version of Outlook online that was free as well.
Oh, you can. But but I don't believe they'll have the correct API or interfaces for a visually impaired person, right? Is that where you're heading?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so he actually needs to have a program like Thunderbird or some other application that his reading programs can work with that may not work that well with a standard browser going to Outlook.com.
Right, and this is why I'm wondering if Office 365 at $6 a month might be a reasonable option at that point, because then you have all of the Office products.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right. Okay. Thank you for calling. But then,
you know, I'm wondering if you know how there's like free versions of like Open Word, right? Open Word, Open Excel. There's
The Open Office. You mean.
Open Office. Yeah, right. Open Office. Right. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they have a version of Outlook of an email program that's equivalent or similar to Outlook. I've never looked into that. I'll have to do that this week.
I agree. I'm not sure if there's a email option.
And if there's an email,
package.
Yes, right. Exactly. I've never really thought of it before.
But mainly what you're saying is that you can, let's say, purchase the license for Office 365, which is basically $99 a year, I think, or like $5 a month.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like $6 a month, and you get all of the
And you get all of
products,
it. Then. You get everything.
Everything.
Excel, PowerPoint, Word, the whole shooting.
And it's always kept up to date for you by Microsoft. Right, exactly. So you're also, you know, it's that might be a better, an easier solution.
And then Mark would be able to get both of those mail sources. Any kind of mail source, he would be able to get through that then?
Correct. Right. Well, Office 365 has Outlook built as part of the download package, so you would use that.
Right. Right. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's head out to Orlando from Detroit. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Orlando, what can we do for you?
Oh, thanks, guys, for taking my call. I appreciate it very much. And I have a Dell computer, and wife and I just upgraded from Windows 7 Home about 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, to Windows 10. And a couple of days ago, she said that she was on the computer and had an update to update the computer, and it froze on the automatic repair screen. So, of course, I powered down the system and powered it back up, and it's still on automatic repair restart, and it also seemed to freeze my remote mouse. So I can't use the mouse to drag it across to hit restart for automatic repair. What should I do?
One of the things you could do is, did you ever create a Windows 10 bootable USB flash drive or CD drive?
No, I didn't.
Okay, because with that, and it's created, and I'm trying to remember the name of it, it's not called the emergency recovery thing, but it's created when you create a backup of your computer. And on there, you have when you plug the USB or the CD into your computer, you have the ability to boot up and then run diagnostics on your computer, repair Windows startup. But you also have the ability to perform a system restore, where you could tell it to go system restore, go back 5 days or 7 days. And so if you know anyone that has that, and I did not bring my Windows 10 computer to go in here, so I could show you what that is, or at least tell you what it is. I can't remember the name.
You're thinking about having them restore back to the previous version before the update.
Correct.
So that's what you're thinking
about. Right, because in Windows 10, you do not have the ability to do an F8 to go into safe mode and then do a system restore. You have to use a bootable Microsoft's recovery flash drive that is created when you install Windows or when you create a Windows backup for the first time. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And so if you know someone that has another Windows 10 computer and you have a spare flash drive that you can I think you can get by with a 2 gigabyte or a 4 gigabyte flash drive. Mm-hmm. When you go into the backup utility or history backup, you'll have the ability to create a bootable flash drive to use to repair your computer. Cal, did you find out the name of that for me?
No, I didn't, but I was going to ask you, is there a safe mode he can boot that computer in?
That's what I'm just saying.
It's hard to get to.
Okay,
it's very hard to get to.
Very hard to get to. Unfortunately, I don't understand why, because it was one of the most useful things, I think, with Microsoft, the operating systems up to that point, that you could use that in when you were in, kind of in the dire straits. So, Orlando, we give you a little bit of a help here to tackle this?
Okay, yes, you have.
Yeah. Okay, good. And if during the week, when you try this kind of thing, some of the points that we have here, a couple things. On Sunday nights, I publish the entire podcast of the program, so you can hear both hours. You can go back and listen to the conversation here. You can also then send us an email and let us know how it worked for you. And then we can continue the conversation with you during the week, okay?
Yep. Oh, thanks so much. You guys have a good day.
You're very welcome. Thank you for giving us a call. Again, the number, 800-859-0957. Mark is with us from Auburn Hills, and you have a Mac question for us.
I do, yes. I have a relative who has an Apple Tower, a Mac, mm-hmm. It's about 10 years old, and they had told me that, hey, it's running slow lately. And I'd mentioned to them, I said, well, it probably just needs to be cleaned, defragmented, all that. So I went there and I cannot figure out how to delete temporary internet files and do a defragmentation on that. Any ideas?
You're using a language I don't know if it applies to the Mac world. I know what you're saying, though. I do know what you're saying.
When you say 10 years old, let me ask you the first question. Do you know what operating system is it running? Is it running OS 10, OS 9? Which one?
That I do not know. I would assume it's running the older version mm-hmm. of Mac. Mm-hmm. That's my assumption.
Well, mm-hmm. if it's running OS 9, somewhere with that Mac when they bought it, it came with a tool utilities disk, or CD, I should say. Mm. And you can take that out. And it has utilities on it for defragmenting and that sort of thing that you can run on that particular machine. The other thing that you can do is that you can boot the machine up, and once it comes up with the screen, if it's running OS 10, you can go into the applications folder, which has a utilities folder in it, which has a disk utilities application within that. You can start that disk utilities up. And it can do things like check for permissions and do a hard drive repair if necessary to fix that up with as well.
Now,
was one of the Mark, were you saying that one of the symptoms was that the computer was beginning to run slower?
Yes. Other than that, no issues. And now, like I say, it is 10 years old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to turn this around, Cal, because it's kind of like maybe the rest of you guys can. The old saying with Microsoft computers was that, or the PC, was that eventually it kind of got crud built up in it, or cruft, as they used to call it, and then you just kind of had to blow it out every now and then and start it over.
You mean rebuild the operating system?
Rebuild the operating system. That was kind of the wisdom. Does that same thing apply to the OS in the operating system in a Mac?
Well, if it's running OS 10, I'd say no, because with Unix, it has some tools in the background that are constantly running to clean that sort of thing up on a regular basis. If it was running OS 9, that might be an issue in that particular case, and yeah, it could fix it up that way. So one of the biggest things to find out is what version of the OS is it running.
Mm-hmm. Are there any particular places? Oh, and by the way, Mark, thank you so much for giving us a call.
Yes, and thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, hey, guys, we got about 10 minutes left, and we got some lines open. 800-859-0957 time yet for your question. I know that there are certain files that you can empty to kind of get rid of temp files. Are there certain key ones in the Apple operating system that you would go for?
Once again, it goes back to whether...
OS 10.
If he's running OS 10, he could just go into Safari, and there is, under Safari, he can go to Preferences, and then within there, you can clear out cache files, you can clear out history files. Those things will help in that particular case.
Are there any? I hear about these P lists and things like that.
Well, the P lists are fine, and you can clear those out as long as you're careful and you don't end up deleting something you shouldn't.
Don't mess. That's why Steve built it that way. It Katie, it's a delight to be returning to the show last week. As a matter of fact, you guys mentioned you saw on Facebook what was going on.
Yes.
I was escorting my granddaughter, Alicia Stack, down the aisle in her wheelchair. She had just received her diploma from Central Michigan University in child care. And as we were coming back up the aisle, that shot that's on the online, and I put it onto our Facebook page, it was when I was coming back up, I noticed there were a number of professional photographers there as we passed them, and they got a really neat shot of us as we were coming back up the aisle.
What I found terribly fascinating is that you, too, also had on a cap and gown.
They maybe, not a cap, but a gown.
Okay.
They didn't want me sticking out like too much of a sore thumb, so I sat next to her in a gown.
What, the silver hair wasn't enough?
They definitely would have thought I was a professor.
So she's a fellow Chippewa for me.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I graduated from CMU many moons ago.
Fire up chips. Boy, that school has come a long way, hasn't it?
Last time I was in Mount Clemens, it's been a few years, but oh my God, it's completely different than I've ever seen it before.
Mount Pleasant is a completely different place because of what's going on there. It's incredible to see. They have their own med school now, so we could say, as they say, fire up chips.
Exactly.
And they it's become quite a school. We were on that day, they had three graduations. We were the middle one, and they went on to, there's cranking these things out with thousands of kids graduating.
I'm sure that casino has nothing to do with it.
Yeah. So we got to go visit the kids and go to the casino. I did not think of that. I should have pushed for it a little better. Okay, before we go way off, we had a previous caller that was having difficulty with the Windows 10 system.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
I could not.
Think of the safe
button. Oh, my gosh, no. Not to save my life. So it's a Windows 10 system repair disk. And you can, if you have a friend, you could just create it. You could type in the search bar. You could type in Windows System Repair Disk, and you can go through the creation process.
So anybody's computer that's running Windows 10.
Or even Windows 8.
Or even Windows 8 will have that on there.
Yes. And so they have the ability to create it.
And a thumb drive. It's like a 4-gig thumb drive.
Or, yes, on a thumb drive, especially with Windows 8, you have that ability. In Windows 10, you can actually even use a Windows 7 one, but Windows 7 didn't natively have the ability to create a USB flash drive. You had to first build a CD and then...
Okay.
So this guy has to go over to a friend's house with a USB drive that has Windows 10 and create the drive on his computer.
Right. Create the bootable flash drive. When you pop it into his computer, it'll automatically recognize, or should automatically recognize it, with the new UEFI BIOSes that are on all the computers.
Okay.
It'll automatically recognize it as a legitimate Microsoft bootable device.
Okay.
And it'll bring up the diagnostics so that he can run the tools, do a system startup repair, or he has the ability to do a system recovery or system restore.
So the version of the Windows machine is not going to make a difference over here to create this drive.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Correct. You can use any of them to repair a Windows 10 system because the basic OS is the same.
Okay. In some ways, that's kind of happy. I mean, happy.
Happy.
Handy. And therefore, happy. Larry from Rochester, welcome to the Internet Advisor. You squeaked onto the line. We're glad to have you with us. What can we do for you?
Well, thank you for taking the call. I really love this show. I have a quick question regarding an app that I have in mind or a business that would be a very unique, call it an Uber-style app. And I don't have the kind of money I've heard it takes to develop these apps and do the background web development as well.
Hmm.
Is there a way, or is there an organization that would help people like myself who don't have several hundred thousand dollars to invest?
If you don't mind, I'm going to jump in and...
Please. I look right at you. I thought, boy, it's good we have you here.
I mean, you know what? He's absolutely right from the standpoint that developing apps nowadays, you know, you're dealing with multi-five figures, you know, somewhere in that range, anywhere from 3 to 6 months to put it together. I don't know that there's a shortcut, but I'm thinking Kickstarter right off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, or one of the crowdfunding places,
yeah,
right?
Crowdfunding,
yeah. The other thing you could think about doing is that they're going to have a Shark Tank interview.
Yes.
I think this weekend or next weekend downtown at Grand Circus. You might want to go down there and do your pitch. You could get almost up to $250,000 investment from them.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Where does that take place and when?
It's going to be at the Grand Circus is a web training company, which is down in Detroit, in the center of Detroit. It's on May 16th. You know, if you go to mitechnews.com, Mike has an article in there about that. It's about ABC's Shark Tank hosting a casting call on May 16th at Grand Circus.
Excellent.
Yeah. So it could be a really neat break in there. But
it's a 90-second pitch, and you have to sell them on your idea. Think of it as the, you know, in like an elevator pitch. You have a pitch you have to give them, and you know, for them, you have to pull them in and reel them in, and so that they'll ask you more questions.
And then after you win $250,000, come back and see Maley. He'll help you get all set.
Thank you very much. Thanks so much for the information. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Head down to the Grand Circus.
All right. Well, so I'm curious. Can you give us a hint about what it's about?
Okay, it took off on the East Coast in Boston. It just started under the name of Chariots for Women. Mine's going to be similar, only it's going to be in a very much outlying areas of the state of Michigan. I'm also going to put together a rewards program and a kickback in terms of charitable donations and allowing the drivers, if possible, to just transfer women and children and elderly folks up in the areas that don't have Uber type.
Oh, wow. I like that. I really like that, to serve areas that are marginal. That is a really, really cool idea. I can see that also being valuable for the disabled.
Yep, exactly. There are several of those that I'm talking about. I'm talking about going into cities like, for example, Alpena, that has 10,000 people, and folks that you know, can't afford to spend $40 on a cab ride, but it would be much less expensive. We'd be taking much less. More of a community service, making a few bucks for ourselves as well.
I love the idea, and I really hope it takes off, because that is a beautiful concept.
My name is TransportHer.com.
TransportHer.com. I will have to look into that, and the very best to you as you take the idea forward. Good luck to that.
Thank you very much.
All right. I love it. Isn't that a great idea?
It's certainly, you know, it shows how technology can keep changing as long as, I mean, it's basically, you know, there is no limit to our creativity.
But I love the idea, too, of reaching out to less served areas. Because in many cases, I think a lot of the technology is being developed, naturally enough, grows up in where there's density, where there's a lot of people around and the money and to work off of this. But then because I know that in a lot of these urban areas, Alpena, matter of fact, you had some relatives that lived up near there.
Yeah, I did. I did. Yeah.
Sheboygan, I think it was.
Matter of fact, yeah, I was thinking of starting, you know, cowtipping.com or something like that. It's really an underserved project.
And on that
in the rural area.
And on that road, ladies and gentlemen, Maley, thank you so much for being with us. Maley Ostley,
on the show.
He is the person behind Smart Finds, and you will find them at Smart Finds Management.
SmartFindsMarketing.com.
SmartFindsMarketing.com. I got it. Maley Ostley, thanks so much for being with us.
And for all you people up in the Upper Peninsula, his name is Rudell.
And that's Cal Carson. Thanks so much, Eric, and also my dear granddaughter, Logan, for being here as well. Folks, Sunday night, I will post the entire 2 hours of this program edited down so that you can enjoy it as a podcast. And we'll have all the show notes up there with the links to the different things that we talked about during the program. My name is Foster Brown. Have a great week. We'll see you back on Saturday.